Chapter 1. Driven from home. A boy of 16, with a small gripsack in his hand, trudged along the country road. He was of good height for his age, strongly built, and had a frank, attractive face. He was naturally of a cheerful temperament, but it present his face was grave, and not without a shade of anxiety. This can hardly be a matter of surprise when we consider that he was thrown upon his own resources, and that his available capital consisted of 37 cents in money, in addition to a good education and a rather unusual amount of physical strength. These last two items were certainly valuable, but they cannot always be exchanged for the necessaries and comforts of life. For some time his steps had been lagging, and from time to time he had to wipe the moisture from his brow with a fine linen handkerchief, which latter seemed hardly compatible with his almost destitute condition. I hasten to introduce my hero, for such he is to be, as Carl Crawford, son of Dr. Paul Crawford, of Edgewood Center. Why he had set out to conquer fortune single-handed will soon appear. A few rods ahead Carl's attention was drawn to a wide-spreading oak tree, with a carpet of verdure under its sturdy boughs. "I will rest here for a little while," he said to himself, and suiting the action to the word, threw down his gripsack and flung himself on the turf. "This is refreshing," he murmured, as, lying upon his back, he looked up through the leafy rifts to the sky above. "I don't know when I have ever been so tired. It's no joke walking a dozen miles under a hot sun, with a heavy gripsack in your hand. It's a good introduction to a life of labor, which I have reason to believe is before me. I wonder how I am coming out at the big or the little end of the horn?" He paused, and his face grew grave, for he understood well that for him life had become a serious matter. In his absorption he did not observe the rapid approach of a boy somewhat younger than himself, mounted on a bicycle. The boy stopped short in surprise, and leapt from his iron steed. "Why, Carl Crawford, is this you? Where in the world are you going with that gripsack?" Carl looked up quickly. "Going to seek my fortune," he answered, soberly. "Well, I hope you'll find it. Don't chaff, though, but tell the honest truth."
"I have told you the truth, Gilbert."
With a puzzled look, Gilbert, first leaning his bicycle against the tree, seated himself on the ground by Carl's side.
"Has your father lost his property?" he asked, abruptly.
"No."
"Has he disinherited you?"
"Not exactly."
"Have you left home for good?"
"I have left home, I hope, for good."
"Have you quarreled with the governor?"
"I hardly know what to say to that. There is a difference between us. He doesn't seem like a Roman father, one who rules his family with a rod of iron."
"No, he is quite the reverse. He hasn't backbone enough.
So it seemed to me when I saw him at the exhibition of the academy. You ought to be able to get along with a father like that, Carl."
"So I could, but for one thing."
"What is that?"
"I have a stepmother," said Carl, with a significant glance at his companion.
"So have I, but she is the soul of kindness, and makes our home the dearest place in the world."
"Are there such stepmothers? I shouldn't have judged so from my own experience. I think I love her as much as if she were my own mother."
"You are lucky," said Carl, sighing.
"Tell me about yours."
"She was married to my father 5 years ago. Up to the time of her marriage I thought her amiable and sweet-tempered. But soon after the wedding she threw off the mask, and made it clear that she disliked me. One reason is that she has a son of her own about my age, a mean, sneaking fellow, who is the apple of her eye. She has been jealous of me, and tried to supplant me in the affection of my father, wishing Peter to be the favored son."
"How has she succeeded?"
"I don't think my father feels any love for Peter, but through my stepmother's influence he generally fares better than I do."
"Why wasn't he sent to school with you?"
"Because he is lazy and doesn't like study. Besides, his mother prefers to have him at home. During my absence she worked upon my father, by telling all sorts of malicious stories about me, till he became estranged from me, and little by little Peter has usurped my place as the favorite."
"Why didn't you deny the stories?" asked Gilbert.
"I did, but no credit was given to my denials. My stepmother was continually poisoning my father's mind against me."
"Did you give her cause? Did you behave disrespectfully to her?"
"No," answered Carl, warmly. "I was prepared to give her a warm welcome, and treat her as a friend, but my advances were so coldly received that my heart was chilled."
"Poor Carl! How long has this been so?"
"From the beginning, ever since Mrs. Crawford came into the house."
"What are your relations with your stepbrother? What's his name?"
"Peter Cook. I despise the boy, for he is mean, and tyrannical where he dares to be. I don't think it would be safe for him to bully you, Carl."
"He tried it, and got a good thrashing. You can imagine what followed. He ran, crying to his mother, and his version of the story was believed. I was confined to my room for a week, and forced to live on bread and water. I shouldn't think your father was a man to inflict such a punishment. It wasn't he, it was my stepmother. She insisted upon it, and he yielded. I heard afterwards from one of the servants that he wanted me released at the end of 24 hours, but she would not consent. How long ago was this? It happened when I was 12. Was it ever repeated? Yes, a month later, but the punishment lasted only for 2 days. And you submitted to it? I had to, but as soon as I was released I gave Peter such a flogging, with a promise to repeat it, if I was ever punished in that manner again, that the boy himself was panic-stricken, and objected to my being imprisoned again. He must be a charming fellow. You would think so if you should see him. He has small, insignificant features, a turn-up nose, and an ugly scowl that appears whenever he is out of humor. And yet your father likes him? I don't think he does, though Peter, by his mother's orders, pays all sorts of small attentions, bringing him his slippers, running on errands, and so on, not because he likes it, but because he wants to supplant me, as he has succeeded in doing. You have finally broken away, then? Yes, I couldn't stand it any longer. Home had become intolerable. Pardon the question, but hasn't your father got considerable property? I have every reason to think so. Won't your leaving home give your stepmother and Peter the inside track, and lead, perhaps, to your disinheritance? I suppose so, answered Carl, wearily, but no matter what happens, I can't bear to stay at home any longer. You're badly fixed, that's a fact, said Gilbert, in a tone of sympathy. What are your plans? I don't know. I haven't had time to think. Chapter 2. A friend worth having. Gilbert wrinkled up his forehead and set about trying to form some plans for Carl. It will be hard for you to support yourself, he said, after a pause, that is, without help. There is no one to help me. I expect no help. I thought your father might be induced to give you an allowance, so that with what you can earn, you may get along comfortably. I think father would be willing to do this, but my stepmother would prevent him. Then she has a great deal of influence over him? Yes, she can twist him round her little finger. I can't understand it. You see, father is an invalid, and is very nervous. If he were in perfect health he would have more force of character and firmness. He is under the impression that he has heart disease, and it makes him timid and vacillating. Still he ought to do something for you. I suppose he ought. Still, Gilbert, I think I can earn my living. What can you do? Well, I have a fair education. I could be an entry clerk, or a salesman in some store, or, if the worst came to the worst, I could work on a farm. I believe farmers give boys who work for them their board and clothes. I don't think the clothes would suit you. I am pretty well supplied with clothing. Gilbert looked significantly at the gripsack. Do you carry it all in there? He asked, doubtfully. Carl laughed. Well, no, he answered. I have a trunk full of clothes at home, though. Why didn't you bring them with you? I would if I were an elephant. Being only a boy, I would find it burdensome carrying a trunk with me. The gripsack is all I can very well manage. I tell you what, said Gilbert. Come round to our house and stay overnight. We live only a mile from here, you know. The folks will be glad to see you, and while you are there I will go to your house, see the governor, and arrange for an allowance for you that will make you comparatively independent. Thank you, Gilbert, but I don't feel like asking favors from those who have ill-treated me. Nor would I of strangers, but Dr. Crawford is your father. It isn't right that Peter, your stepbrother, should be supported in ease and luxury, while you, the real son, should be subjected to privation and want. I don't know but you are right, admitted Carl, slowly. Of course I am right. Now, will you make me your minister plenipotentiary, armed with full powers? Yes, I believe I will. That's right. That shows you are a boy of sense. Now, as you are subject to my directions, just get on that bicycle and I will carry your gripsack, and we will seek Vance Villa, as we call it when we want to be high-toned, by the most direct route. No, no, Gilbert, I will carry my own gripsack. I won't burden you with it, said Carl, rising from his recumbent position. Look here, Carl, how far have you walked with it this morning? About 12 miles. Then, of course, you're tired, and require rest. Just jump on that bicycle, and I'll take the gripsack. If you have carried it 12 miles, I can surely carry it 1. You are very kind, Gilbert. Why shouldn't I be? But it is imposing up on your good nature. But Gilbert had turned his head in a backward direction, and nodded in a satisfied way as he saw a light, open buggy rapidly approaching. There's my sister in that carriage, he said. She comes in good time. I will put you and your gripsack in with her, and I'll take to my bicycle again. Your sister may not like such an arrangement. Won't she though? She's very fond of Beau, and she will receive you very graciously. You make me feel bashful, Gilbert. You won't be long. Julia will chat away to you as if she'd known you for 50 years. I was very young 50 years ago, said Carl, smiling. Hi, there, Jewel, called Gilbert, waving his hand. Julia Vance stopped the horse, and looked inquiringly and rather admiringly at Carl, who was a boy of fine appearance. Let me introduce you to my friend and schoolmate, Carl Crawford. Carl took off his hat politely. I am very glad to make your acquaintance, Mr. Crawford, said Julia, demurely. I have often heard Gilbert speak of you. I hope he said nothing bad about me, Miss Vance. You may be sure he didn't. If he should now, I wouldn't believe him. You've made a favorable impression, Carl, said Gilbert, smiling. I am naturally prejudiced against boys having such a brother, said Julia, but it is not fair to judge all boys by him. That is outrageous injustice, said Gilbert, but then, sisters seldom appreciate their brothers. Some other fellows' sisters may, said Carl. They do, they do. Did you ever see such a vain, conceited boy, Mr. Crawford? Of course you know him better than I do. Come, Carl, it's too bad for you, too, to join against me. However, I will forget and forgive. Jewel, my friend, Carl, has accepted my invitation to make us a visit. I am very glad, I am sure, said Julia, sincerely. And I want you to take him in, bag and baggage, and convey him to our palace, while I speed thither on my wheel. To be sure I will, and with great pleasure. Can't you get out and assist him into the carriage, Jewel? Thank you, said Carl, but though I am somewhat old and quite infirm, I think I can get in without troubling your sister. Are you sure, Miss Vance, you won't be incommoded by my gripsack? Not at all. Then I will accept your kind offer. In a trice Carl was seated next to Julia, with his valise at his feet. Won't you drive, Mr. Crawford? Said the young lady. Don't let me take the reins from you. I don't think it looks well for a lady to drive when a gentleman is sitting beside her. Carl was glad to take the reins, for he liked driving. Now for a race, said Gilbert, who was mounted on his bicycle. All right, replied Carl. Look out for us. They started, and the two kept neck and neck till they entered the driveway leading up to a handsome country mansion. Carl followed them into the house, and was cordially received by Mr. and Mrs. Vance, who were very kind and hospitable, and were favorably impressed by the gentlemanly appearance of their son's friend. Half an hour later dinner was announced, and Carl, having removed the stains of travel in his schoolmate's room, descended to the dining room, and, it must be confessed, did ample justice to the bounteous repast spread before him. In the afternoon Julia, Gilbert and he played tennis, and had a trial at archery. The hours glided away very rapidly, and 6 o'clock came before they were aware. Gilbert, said Carl, as they were preparing for tea, you have a charming home. You have a nice house, too, Carl. True, but it isn't a home to me. There is no love there. That makes a great difference. If I had a father and mother like yours I should be happy. You must stay here till day after tomorrow, and I will devote tomorrow to a visit in your interest to your home. I will beard the lion in his den, that is, your stepmother. Do you consent? Yes, I consent, but it won't do any good. We will see. Chapter 3 Introduces Peter Cook. Gilbert took the morning train to the town of Edgewood Center, the residence of the Crawfords. He had been there before, and knew that Carl's home was nearly a mile distant from the station. Though there was a hack in waiting, he preferred to walk, as it would give him a chance to think over what he proposed to say to Dr. Crawford in Carl's behalf. He was within a quarter of a mile of his destination when his attention was drawn to a boy of about his own age, who was amusing himself and a smaller companion by firing stones at a cat that had taken refuge in a tree. Just as Gilbert came up, a stone took effect, and the poor cat moaned in affright, but did not dare to come down from her perch, as this would put her in the power of her assailant. That must be Carl's stepbrother, Peter, Gilbert decided, as he noted the boy's mean face and turn-up nose. Stoning cats seems to be his idea of amusement. I shall take the liberty of interfering. Peter Cook laughed heartily at his successful aim. I hit her, Simon, he said. Doesn't she look seared? You must have hurt her. I expect I did. I'll take a bigger stone next time. He suited the action to the word, and picked up a rock which, should it hit the poor cat, would in all probability kill her, and prepared to fire. Put down that rock, said Gilbert, indignantly. Peter turned quickly, and eyed Gilbert insolently. Who are you? He demanded. No matter who I am. Put down that rock. What business is it of yours? I shall make it my business to protect that cat from your cruelty. Peter, who was a natural coward, took courage from having a companion to back him up, and retorted, You'd better clear out of here, or I may fire at you. Do it if you dare, said Gilbert, quietly. Peter concluded that it would be wiser not to carry out his threat, but was resolved to keep to his original purpose. He raised his arm again, and took aim, but Gilbert rushed in, and striking his arm forcibly, compelled him to drop it. What do you mean by that, you loafer? Demanded Peter, his eyes blazing with anger. To stop your fun, if that's what you call it. I've a good mind to give you a thrashing. Gilbert put himself in a position of defense. Sail in, if you want to. He responded. Help me, Simon, said Peter. You grab his legs, and I'll upset him. Simon, who, though younger, was braver than Peter, without hesitation followed directions. He threw himself on the ground and grasped Gilbert by the legs, while Peter, doubling up his fists, made a rush at his enemy. But Gilbert, swiftly eluding Simon, struck out with his right arm, and Peter, unprepared for so forcible a defense, tumbled over on his back, and Simon ran to his assistance. Gilbert put himself on guard, expecting a second attack, but Peter apparently thought it wiser to fight with his tongue. You rascal! He shrieked, almost foaming at the mouth, I'll have you arrested. What for? Asked Gilbert, coolly. For flying at me like a tiger, and trying to kill me. Gilbert laughed at this curious version of things. I thought it was you who flew at me, he said. What business had you to interfere with me? I'll do it again unless you give up firing stones at the cat. I'll do it as long as I like. She's gone, said Simon. The boys looked up into the tree, and could see nothing of Puss. She had taken the opportunity, when her assailant was otherwise occupied, to make good her escape. I'm glad of it, said Gilbert. Good morning, boys. When we meet again, I hope you will be more creditably employed. You don't get off so easy, you loafer, said Peter, who saw the village constable approaching. Here, Mr. Rogers, I want you to arrest this boy. Constable Rogers, who was a stout, broad-shouldered man, nearly 6 feet in height, turned from one to the other, and asked, What has he done? He knocked me over. I want him arrested for assault and battery. And what did you do? I didn't do anything. That is rather strange. Young man, what is your name?
Gilbert Vance.
You don't live in this town?
No, I live in Warren.
What made you attack Peter?
Because he flew at me, and I had to defend myself.
Is this so, Simon? You saw all that happened?
Yes, admitted Simon, unwillingly. That puts a different face on the matter. I don't see how I can arrest this boy. He had a right to defend himself.
He came up and abused me, the loafer, said Peter.
That was the reason you went at him?
Yes.
Have you anything to say? Asked the constable, addressing Gilbert.
Yes, sir, when I came up I saw this boy firing stones at a cat, who had taken refuge in that tree over there. He had just hit her, and had picked up a larger stone to fire when I ordered him to drop it.
It was no business of yours, muttered Peter.
I made it my business, and will again.
Did the cat have a white spot on her forehead? Asked the constable.
Yes, sir.
And was mouse-colored?
Yes, sir.
Why, it's my little girl's cat. She would be heartbroken if the cat were seriously hurt. You young rascal. He continued, turning suddenly upon Peter, and shaking him vigorously. Let me catch you at this business again, and I'll give you such a warming that you'll never want to touch another cat.
Let me go. Cried the terrified boy. I didn't know it was your cat.
It would have been just as bad if it had been somebody else's cat. I've a great mind to put you in the lockup.
Oh, don't, please don't, Mr. Rogers. Implored Peter, quite panic-stricken.
Will you promise never to stone another cat?
Yes,
sir.
Then go about your business. Peter lost no time, but scuttled up the street with his companion.
I am much obliged to you for protecting Flora's cat, then said the constable to Gilbert.
You are quite welcome, sir. I won't see any animal abused if I can help it.
You are right there.
Wasn't that boy Peter Cook?
Yes. Don't you know him?
No, but I know his stepbrother, Carl.
A different sort of boy. Have you come to visit him?
No, he is visiting me. In fact, he has left home, because he could not stand his stepmother's ill treatment, and I have come to see his father in his behalf.
He has had an uncomfortable home.
Dr. Crawford is an invalid, and very much under the influence of his wife, who seems to have a spite against Carl, and is devoted to that young cub to whom you have given a lesson.
Does Carl want to come back?
No, he wants to strike out for himself, but I told him it was no more than right that he should receive some help from his father.
That is true enough. For nearly all the doctor's money came to him through Carl's mother.
I am afraid Peter and his mother won't give me a very cordial welcome after what has happened this morning.
I wish I could see the doctor alone.
So you can, for there he is coming up the street.
Gilbert looked in the direction indicated, and his glance fell on a thin, fragile-looking man, evidently an invalid, with a weak, undecided face, who was slowly approaching.
The boy advanced to meet him, and, taking off his hat, asked politely, "Is this Dr. Crawford?"
Chapter 4. An important conference.
Dr. Crawford stopped short, and eyed Gilbert attentively.
"I don't know you," he said, in a querulous tone.
"I am a schoolmate of your son, Carl. My name is Gilbert Vance.
If you have come to see my son, you will be disappointed. He has treated me in a shameful manner. He left home yesterday morning, and I don't know where he is."
"I can tell you, sir. He is staying for a day or two at my father's house."
"Where is that?" asked Dr. Crawford, his manner showing that he was confused.
"In Warren, 13 miles from here."
"I know the town. What induced him to go to your house? Have you encouraged him to leave home?" inquired Dr. Crawford, with a look of displeasure.
"No, sir. It was only by chance that I met him a mile from our home. I induced him to stay overnight."
"Did you bring me any message from him?"
"No, sir, except that he is going to strike out for himself, as he thinks his home an unhappy one.
That is his own fault. He has had enough to eat and enough to wear. He has had as comfortable a home as yourself."
"I don't doubt that, but he complains that his stepmother is continually finding fault with him, and scolding him.
He provokes her to do it. He is a headstrong, obstinate boy.
He never had that reputation at school, sir. We all liked him."
"I suppose you mean to imply that I am in fault?" said the doctor, warmly.
"I don't think you know how badly Mrs. Crawford treats Carl, sir."
"Of course, of course. That is always said of a stepmother."
"Not always, sir. I have a stepmother myself, and no own mother could treat me better."
"You are probably a better boy."
"I can't accept the compliment.
I hope you'll excuse me saying it, Drive Crawford, but if my stepmother treated me as Carl says Mrs. Crawford treats him, I wouldn't stay in the house another day."
"Really, this is very annoying," said Dr. Crawford, irritably. "Have you come here from Warren to say this?"
"No, sir, not entirely.
Perhaps Carl wants me to receive him back. I will do so if he promises to obey his stepmother."
"That he won't do, I am sure."
"Then what is the object of your visit?"
"To say that Carl wants and intends to earn his own living. But it is hard for a boy of his age, who has never worked, to earn enough at first to pay for his board and clothes. He asks, or, rather, I ask for him, that you will allow him a small sum, say $3 or $4 a week, which is considerably less than he must cost you at home, for a time until he gets on his feet."
"I don't know," said Dr. Crawford, in a vacillating tone. "I don't think Mrs. Crawford would approve this.
It seems to me you are the one to decide, as Carl is your own son. Peter must cost you a good deal more."
"Do you know Peter?"
"I have met him," answered Gilbert, with a slight smile.
"I don't know what to say. You may be right. Peter does cost me more. And Carl is entitled to be treated as well as he. I think I ought to speak to Mrs. Crawford about it. And, by the way, I nearly forgot to say that she charges Carl with taking money from her bureau drawer before he went away. It was a large sum, $225.
"That is false," exclaimed Gilbert, indignantly. "I am surprised that you should believe such a thing of your own son."
"Mrs. Crawford says she has proof," said the doctor, hesitating.
"Then what has he done with the money?" I know that he has but 37 cents with him at this time, and he only left home yesterday. If the money has really been taken, I think I know who took it.
Who?
Peter Cook. He looks mean enough for anything.
What right have you to speak so of Peter?
Because I caught him stoning a cat this morning. He would have killed the poor thing if I had not interfered. I consider that worse than taking money.
I don't know what to say. I can't agree to anything till I have spoken with Mrs. Crawford.
Did you say that Carl had the 37 cents?
Yes, sir. I presume you don't want him to starve?
No, of course not. He is my son, though he has behaved badly. Here, give him that. And Dr. Crawford drew a $10 bill from his wallet, and handed it to Gilbert.
Thank you, sir. This money will be very useful. Besides, it will show Carl that his father is not wholly indifferent to him.
Of course not. Who says that I am a bad father? Asked Dr. Crawford, peevishly.
I don't think, sir, there would be any difficulty between you and Carl if you had not married again.
Carl has no right to vex Mrs. Crawford. Besides, he can't agree with Peter.
Is that his fault or Peter's? Asked Gilbert, significantly.
I am not acquainted with the circumstances, but Mrs. Crawford says that Carl is always bullying Peter.
He never bullied anyone at school.
Is there anything else you want?
Yes, sir, Carl only took away a little underclothing and a gripsack. He would like his woolen clothes put in his trunk, and to have it sent.
Where?
Perhaps it had better be sent to my house. There are one or two things in his room also that he asked me to get.
Why didn't he come himself?
Because he thought it would be unpleasant for him to meet Mrs. Crawford. They would be sure to quarrel.
Well, perhaps he is right, said Dr. Crawford, with an air of relief. About the allowance, I shall have to consult my wife. Will you come with me to the house?
Yes, sir, I should like to have the matter settled today, so that Carl will know what to depend upon.
Gilbert rather dreaded the interview he was likely to have with Mrs. Crawford, but he was acting for Carl, and his feelings of friendship were strong. So he walked beside Dr. Crawford till they reached the tasteful dwelling occupied as a residence by Carl and his father. How happy Carl could be here, if he had a stepmother like mine, Gilbert thought. They went up to the front door, which was opened for them by a servant.
Jane, is Mrs. Crawford in? Asked the doctor.
No, sir, not just now. She went to the village to do some shopping.
Is Peter in?
No, sir.
Then you will have to wait till they return.
Can't I go up to Carl's room and be packing his things?
Yes, I think you may. I don't think Mrs. Crawford would object.
Good heavens! Hasn't the man a mind of his own? Thought Gilbert.
Jane, you may show this young gentleman up to Master Carl's room, and give him the key of his trunk. He is going to pack his clothes.
When is Master Carl coming back? Asked Jane.
I don't know. I think he will be away for a time.
I wish it was Peter instead of him, said Jane, in a low voice, only audible to Gilbert. She showed Gilbert the way upstairs, while the doctor went to his study.
Are you a friend of Master Carl's? Asked Jane, as soon as they were alone.
Yes, Jane.
And where is he?
At my house.
Is he going to stay there?
For a short time. He wants to go out into the world and make his own living.
And no wonder, poor boy. It's hard times he had here.
Didn't Mrs. Crawford treat him well? Asked Gilbert, with curiosity.
Is it treating him well?
She was a jawing him from morning till night.
Ugh, but she's an ugly creature.
How about Peter?
He's just as bad the mainest boy I've ever set eyes on. It would do me good to see him flogged.
She chatted a little longer with Gilbert, helping him to find Carl's clothes, when suddenly a shrill voice was heard calling her from below.
Sure, it's the madam, said Jane, shrugging her shoulders. I expect she's in a temper, and she rose from her knees and hurried downstairs.
Chapter 5. Carl's stepmother. 5 minutes later, as Gilbert was closing the trunk, Jane reappeared.
The doctor and Mrs. Crawford would like to see you downstairs, she said.
Gilbert followed Jane into the library, where Dr. Crawford and his wife were seated. He looked with interest at the woman who had made home so disagreeable to Carl, and was instantly prejudiced against her. She was light-complexioned, with very light brown hair, cold, gray eyes, and a disagreeable expression which seemed natural to her.
My dear, said the doctor, this is the young man who has come from Carl.
Mrs. Crawford surveyed Gilbert with an expression by no means friendly.
What is your name?
She asked.
Gilbert Vance.
Did Carl Crawford send you here?
No, I volunteered to come.
Did he tell you that he was disobedient and disrespectful to me?
No, he told me that you treated him so badly that he was unwilling to live in the same house with you, answered Gilbert, boldly.
Well, upon my word! Exclaimed Mrs. Crawford, fanning herself vigorously.
Dr. Crawford, did you hear that?
Yes.
And what do you think of it?
Well, I think you may have been too hard upon Carl.
Too hard? Why, then, did he not treat me respectfully? This boy seems inclined to be impertinent.
I answered your questions, madam, said Gilbert, coldly.
I suppose you side with your friend Carl?
I certainly do.
Mrs. Crawford bit her lip.
What is the object of your coming? Does Carl wish to return?
I thought Dr. Crawford might have told you.
Carl wants his clothes sent to him, said the doctor. He only carried a few with him.
I shall not consent to it. He deserves no favors at our hands.
This was too much even for Dr. Crawford.
You go too far, Mrs. Crawford, he said. I am sensible of the boy's faults, but I certainly will not allow his clothes to be withheld from him.
Oh, well. Spoil him if you choose, said the lady, sullenly. Take his part against your wife.
I have never done that, but I will not allow him to be defrauded of his clothes.
I have no more to say, said Mrs. Crawford, her eyes snapping. She was clearly mortified at her failure to carry her point.
Do you wish the trunk to be sent to your house? Asked the doctor.
Yes, sir, I have packed the clothes and locked the trunk.
I should like to examine it before it goes, put in Mrs. Crawford, spitefully.
Why?
To make sure that nothing has been put in that does not belong to Carl.
Do you mean to accuse me of stealing, madam? Demanded Gilbert, indignantly.
Mrs. Crawford tossed her head.
I don't know anything about you, she replied.
Dr. Crawford, am I to open the trunk? Asked Gilbert.
No, answered the doctor, with unwonted decision.
I hate that boy. He has twice subjected me to mortification, thought Mrs. Crawford.
You know very well, she said, turning to her husband, that I have grounds for my request. I blush to mention it, but I have reason to believe that your son took a wallet containing $25 from my bureau drawer.
I deny it, said Gilbert.
What do you know about it, I should like to ask? Sneered Mrs. Crawford.
I know that Carl is an honorable boy, incapable of theft, and at this moment has but 37 cents in his possession.
So far as you know.
If the money has really disappeared, madam, you had better ask your own boy about it.
This is insufferable! Exclaimed Mrs. Crawford, her light eyes emitting angry flashes.
Who dares to say that Peter took the wallet? She went on, rising to her feet.
There was an unexpected reply. Jane entered the room at this moment to ask a question.
I say so, ma'am, she rejoined.
What?
Ejaculated Mrs. Crawford, with startling emphasis.
I didn't mean to say anything about it till I found you were charging it on Master Carl. I saw Peter open your bureau drawer, take out the wallet, and put it in his pocket.
It's a lie, said Mrs. Crawford, hoarsely.
It's the truth, though I suppose you don't want to believe it. If you want to know what he did with the money, ask him how much he paid for the gold ring he bought of the jeweler down at the village.
You are a spy, a base, dishonorable spy, cried Mrs. Crawford.
I won't say what you are, ma'am, to bring false charges against Master Carl, and I wonder the doctor will believe them.
Leave the house directly, you hussy! Shrieked Mrs. Crawford.
If I do, I wonder who'll get the dinner? Remarked Jane, not at all disturbed.
I won't stay here to be insulted, said the angry lady.
Dr. Crawford, you might have spirit enough to defend your wife.
She flounced out of the room, not waiting for a reply, leaving the doctor dazed and flurried.
I hope, sir, you are convinced now that Carl did not take Mrs. Crawford's money, said Gilbert.
I told you it was probably Peter.
Are you sure of what you said, Jane? Asked the doctor.
Yes, sir. I saw Peter take the wallet with my own eyes.
It is his mother's money, and they must settle it between them. I am glad Carl did not take it.
Really, this has been a very unpleasant scene.
I am sorry for my part in it. Carl is my friend, and I feel that I ought to stand up for his rights, remarked Gilbert.
Certainly, certainly, that is right. But you see how I am placed.
I see that this is no place for Carl. If you'll allow me, I will send an expressman for the trunk, and take it with me to the station.
Yes, I see no objection. I would invite you to dinner,
but Mrs. Crawford seems to be suffering from a nervous attack, and it might not be pleasant.
I agree with you, sir.
Just then Peter entered the room, and looked at Gilbert with surprise and wrath, remembering his recent discomfiture at the hands of the young visitor.
My stepson, Peter, announced Dr. Crawford.
Peter and I have met before, said Gilbert, smiling.
What are you here for? Asked Peter, rudely.
Not to see you, answered Gilbert, turning from him.
My mother'll have something to say to you, went on Peter, significantly.
She will have something to say to you, retorted Gilbert. She has found out who stole her money.
Peter's face turned scarlet instantly, and he left the room hurriedly.
Perhaps I ought not to have said that, Dr. Crawford, added Gilbert, apologetically, but I dislike that boy very much, and couldn't help giving him as good as he sent.
It is all very unpleasant, responded Dr. Crawford, peevishly. I don't see why I can't live in peace and tranquility.
I won't intrude upon you any longer, said Gilbert, if you will kindly tell me whether you will consent to make Carl a small weekly allowance.
I can't say now. I want time to think. Give me your address, and I will write to Carl in your care.
Very well, sir. Gilbert left the house and made arrangements to have Carl's trunk called for. It accompanied him on the next train to Warren. Chapter 6. Mrs. Crawford's letter.
How did you like my stepmother? Asked Carl, when Gilbert returned in the afternoon.
She's a daisy. Answered Gilbert, shrugging his shoulders. I don't think I ever saw a more disagreeable woman.
Do you blame me for leaving home?
I only wonder you have been able to stay so long.
I had a long conversation with your father.
Mrs. Crawford has made a different man of him. I should have no trouble in getting along with him if there was no one to come between us.
He gave me this for you, said Gilbert, producing the $10 bill.
Did my stepmother know of his sending it?
No, she was opposed to sending your trunk, but your father said emphatically you should have it.
I am glad he showed that much spirit.
I have some hopes that he will make you an allowance of a few dollars a week.
That would make me all right, but I don't expect it.
You will probably hear from your father tomorrow or next day, so you will have to make yourself contented a little longer.
I hope you are not very homesick, Mr. Crawford? Said Julia, coquettishly.
I would ask nothing better than to stay here permanently, rejoined Carl, earnestly. This is a real home. I have met with more kindness here than in 6 months at my own home.
You have one staunch friend at home, said Gilbert.
You don't allude to Peter?
So far as I can judge, he hates you like poison. I mean Jane.
Yes, Jane is a real friend. She has been in the family for 10 years. She was a favorite with my own mother, and feels an interest in me.
By the way, your stepmother's charge that you took a wallet containing money from her drawer has been disproved by Jane. She saw Peter abstracting the money, and so informed Mrs. Crawford.
I am not at all surprised. Peter is mean enough to steal or do anything else.
What did my stepmother say?
She was very angry, and threatened to discharge Jane, but, as no one would be left to attend to the dinner, I presume she is likely to stay.
I ought to be forming some plan, said Carl, thoughtfully.
Wait till you hear from home. Julia will see that your time is well filled up till then. Dismiss all care, and enjoy yourself while you may.
This seemed to be sensible advice, and Carl followed it. In the evening some young people were invited in, and there was a round of amusements that made Carl forget that he was in exile from home, with very dubious prospects.
You are all spoiling me, he said, as Gilbert and he went upstairs to bed. I am beginning to understand the charms of home. To go out into the world from here will be like taking a cold shower bath.
Never forget, Carl, that you will be welcome back, whenever you feel like coming, said Gilbert, laying his hand affectionately on Carl's shoulder. We all like you here.
Thank you, old fellow. I appreciate the kindness I have received here, but I must strike out for myself.
How do you feel about it, Carl?
I hope for the best. I am young, strong and willing to work. There must be an opening for me somewhere.
The next morning, just after breakfast, a letter arrived for Carl, mailed at Edgewood Center.
Is it from your father? Asked Gilbert.
No, it is in the handwriting of my stepmother. I can guess from that it contains no good news.
He opened the letter, and as he read it his face expressed disgust and annoyance.
Read it, Gilbert, he said, handing him the open sheet.
This was the missive.
Carl Crawford, as your father has a nervous attack, brought on by your misconduct, he has authorized me to write to you. As you are but 16, he could send for you and have you forcibly brought back,
but deems it better for you to follow your own course and suffer the punishment of your obstinate and perverse conduct. The boy whom you sent here proved a fitting messenger. He seems, if possible, to be even worse than yourself. He was very impertinent to me, and made a brutal and unprovoked attack on my poor boy, Peter, whose devotion to your father and myself forms an agreeable contrast to your steady disregard of our wishes. Your friend had the assurance to ask for a weekly allowance for you while a voluntary exile from the home where you have been only too well treated. In other words, you want to be paid for your disobedience. Even if your father were weak enough to think of complying with this extraordinary request, I should do my best to dissuade him. Small doubt of that, said Carl, bitterly. In my sorrow for your waywardness, I am comforted by the thought that Peter is too good and conscientious ever to follow your example. While you are away, he will do his utmost to make up to your father for his disappointment in you. That you may grow wise in time, and turn at length from the error of your ways, is the earnest hope of your stepmother. Anastasia Crawford. It makes me sick to read such a letter as that, Gilbert, said Carl. And to have that sneak and thief as he turned out to be Peter, set up as a model for me, is a little too much. I never knew there were such women in the world, returned Gilbert. I can understand your feelings perfectly, after my interview of yesterday. She thinks even worse of you than of me, said Carl, with a faint smile. I have no doubt Peter shares her sentiments. I didn't make many friends in your family, it must be confessed. You did me a service, Gilbert, and I shall not soon forget it. Where did your stepmother come from? Asked Gilbert, thoughtfully. I don't know. My father met her at some summer resort. She was staying in the same boarding house, she and the angelic Peter. She lost no time in setting her cap for my father, who was doubtless reported to her as a man of property, and she succeeded in capturing him. I wonder at that. She doesn't seem very fascinating. She made herself very agreeable to my father, and was even affectionate in her manner to me, though I couldn't get to like her. The end was that she became Mrs. Crawford. Once installed in our house, she soon threw off the mask and showed herself in her true colors, a cold-hearted, selfish and disagreeable woman. I wonder your father doesn't recognize her for what she is. She is very artful, and is politic enough to treat him well. She has lost no opportunity of prejudicing him against me. If he were not an invalid, she would find her task more difficult. Did she have any property when your father married her? Not that I have been able to discover. She is scheming to have my father leave the lion's share of his property to